It's Tuesday, so you've got me. I'm Carousel Baird. Hey, you can listen to me any day of the week online at WORTFM.org. If you like what you're hearing, click in the link below and any donation makes a huge difference.
6 foot six above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Tuesday, so that means you've got me. I'm Carousel Baird. And I want to remind you, you are listening to volunteer-powered, listener-sponsored community radio, WORT 89.9 FM Madison. And today we are bringing a sort of a recap, but actually more like an update on two shows, the two issues that we've talked about before, which I love that we have time to fit this into our schedule. We have a split show today. For the first half, we're going to give an update on what's happening with the Wisconsin state budget. We talked about it a couple of times in the past 6 months, and a guest that we had on in December that talked about the budget shortfalls, we're having him back again today to talk about the budget surplus. We'll see what that means. And then for the second half of the show, we have Matt Rothschild, who's joining us from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign to specifically talk about the anti-voter legislation that has been introduced here in the state of Wisconsin. We have talked about that on a national level, and we have talked about the bills here in Wisconsin. But the update today is that many business and faith leaders, hundreds of them, have now come out in opposition. And what that means, why they're making their position being heard now, taking this stance, and what that means as the legislation unfortunately moves forward here in Wisconsin. So those are our two great shows. Before we get to them, I want to thank all our fabulous listeners and all our supporters, because we did have Pledge Week. 2 weeks ago was Pledge Week. Last week was sort of non-pledge week, pledge week. I don't know what we're calling it, but I want to give one more shout out. There was one supporter that we didn't give a shout out to, and I do apologize. Laura from Madison, she is a new monthly donor, and we so appreciate Laura and all of our listeners and all of our supporters. There is always time. You can always contribute. You don't have to contribute during Pledge Week. You can always go to our website at WORTFM.org and make a contribution. And here's hoping that the next time we have Pledge Week, we'll all be live in the studio instead of live from wherever we respectively are. I, of course, am still here on the west side of Madison in my lovely closet, to be continued as always. So, let's get the show started, shall we? We have, for the first half, Jason Stein is joining us. He is the research director with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Hi, Jason. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Carousel.
And it's great to have you a second time. So, like I said in the intro, you were with us in December. And in December, we were talking about the $370+ million budget shortfall we were expecting for the state of Wisconsin as it began deliberating the next state budget, the 2022-2023 state budget. Do I have those numbers right? 2021?
Yes.
20. Okay, good. Good.
2021-2023, right.
Right. 21-23. Thank you. Because they're in the middle of the year. But a position paper that just was released from the Wisconsin Policy Forum talking about, and I'm going to talk about how there we're now expecting a budget surplus, an unprecedented $4.4 billion with a B of revision tax collection. So tell us about how did we change from where we were to where we are now?
Well, and this is a good, you know, teachable moment. And to say that, you know, these projections are just that we talk about, and often they turn out to be, you know, very different than what we anticipated. I mean, the pandemic was something that in January of 2020, no one was really expecting. And then when you talk about where we were, well, our conversation in December of 2020, at that point, we were really sort of going on estimates of tax revenue that were done in October, November. And you know, those turned out to be very, very low for a couple reasons. One, the federal government did two major rounds of pandemic relief, one signed by President Trump at the end of December, and then another one signed by President Biden, the American Rescue Plan Act, in March. So those had a tremendous upward impact on the economy and tax collections. And then, you know, vaccines, you know, though in some ways those tax projections, they just did not fully account for the speed with which, you know, these newly approved, at that time, newly approved vaccines were going to roll through our society and the beneficial effect that that has had for the economy and for tax collection. So, I mean, you know, those factors maybe coupled with pent up consumer demand to go and do all the things that we haven't gotten to do for more than a year. That has really given us a remarkable increase in tax collections in 2021 that we expect to be 10%, which would be the most in 20 years, the most growth in 20 years.
So we were expecting the world to sort of continue in this sort of pandemic mode. We were trying, you yourself and many other, the budget projectionists were saying, look, we're not doing so well. Everyone's sort of hunkering down in their home and trying to avoid, you know, being catching the coronavirus, and therefore we don't expect economic activity to pick up. And yet, because of what we've seen from the federal government, and because the vaccines were circulated and accessible, and overall Wisconsin as a state, and certainly Madison and Dane County is a leader, but even Wisconsin as a state, we're overall a rather vaccinated state. And so because of that, people are getting back to their regular life. But even more so, how do you explain that, like you said, the 9.8% tax increase, the numbers are, they seem to be the highest that we've seen in decades.
Right. I mean, that's the largest increase in general fund tax collections since 2000. If you look at sales taxes, they're going to grow 8.4% estimated in 2021. That would be the fastest pace since the early to mid 1980s. Corporate taxes are going to grow roughly 45% in 2021. That would be the second highest growth going in a year going back to the mid 1960s. So these are really amazing numbers. And I think, you know, to some degree, again, they reflect the federal stimulus. They reflect the fact that vaccines turned out to be not only available, but very effective, not perfect, but pretty darn effective. And so all of those things together have had a, you know, I mean, the federal aid to state and local governments alone in Wisconsin throughout the pandemic has been more than $19 billion that's been pledged. And that doesn't even count the relief to businesses or to, you know, the income tax cuts that people received, the checks that people received. So, you know, this has been sort of a remarkable series of events, and it's had the outcome that even if the last year has been exceptionally difficult for the people of Wisconsin, more than 7,000 deaths, excuse me, the state's finances have held up remarkably well. And it puts us in a position where we can now think about taking on some tasks that would have been difficult to take on even before the pandemic. So it's a pretty remarkable reversal.
And Jason, I want to sort of ask what I think is going to be the dumb question, but I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. When we talk about tax collection, we're talking about we have additional revenue because individuals, businesses, organizations are paying taxes at a higher rate and percentage than we expect, sales taxes, etc., because people are earning money and spending money?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Corporations are making money. You know, again, we got estimates from the legislature's budget office in January. Those got revised upward you know, in recent days by, and that the upward revision was more than $4.4 billion. Now, again, some of that is projected for the next 2 years, but a huge chunk of that really derives from what we've already seen in recent months, just improvements in recent months. And so, you know, the in this year alone, we expect taxes to be, you know, $1 billion more than we were thinking just a few months ago. And so, you know, that becomes then our new base that we start up. Just like, you know, if you get a raise from your boss, that's your new base that you take into the new year. And it's the same way. The base for our sort of income taxes, sales taxes, corporate taxes has just been built up by such a degree that we can look ahead and say, wow, we're in a completely different position than we thought we were going to be.
Is there a thought of sort of the pendulum? It was on one side of, and it swung maybe too high in response, and it'll settle down. Are we overspending and overexcited because we've all been stuck in our houses? Here I am stuck in my bedroom closet, literally broadcasting my radio show. Is there a concern that it swings back down or finds a middle ground?
I mean, I think that's a very insightful question. I mean, I think we'll have to see. There's certainly some of these things that are unlikely to be sustained. Corporate taxes probably unlikely to be sustained at the level that they are now. You know, we'll see in the coming months. One thing that has been, you know, that is a reality is that some of these things are going to continue. I mean, you know, the federal aid will continue to flow in over a couple years. So some of these things may well continue. There could certainly be new threats on the horizon, whether that's inflation or something else. But, you know, at the moment, and so I think that's always good to be cautious because we've seen how just in a few months these projections can change. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, there is the ability to address some of the substantial needs that are out there in the state that we just would not have thought we would have had only a few months ago.
We're talking right now with Jason Stein. He is the research director for Wisconsin Policy Forum. We would love your questions or comments if you want to join the conversation. You can give us a call at area code 608-256-2001, extension 9. We have Rochelle here in the studio. Hooray, Rochelle. Glad you're back. We missed you last week. Rochelle is here, ready to take your calls. She can patch you through onto the show if you want to join us in conversation, or if you want to pass a message to us through Rochelle, she's happy to do that too. Area code 608-256-2001, extension 9. So, okay, Jason, here we are with all our extra money. We went from $1 million shortfall to billions excess. What has the legislature done? Are they jumping up and down? Are they excited? Are they like, yay, 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 money, money, money? Are they coming up with plans? What are we hearing from the Joint Finance Committee, which is the legislative committee that oversees the creation of the legislature's budget?
Well, it depends a lot on which party you're talking about. I mean, the main thing we've heard from the Republicans is talk of tax cuts. Obviously, one thing, and there certainly would be the kind of revenue that would allow you to do tax cuts. One concern there is that this additional federal aid that I mentioned before is a good chunk of it is predicated on the state not cutting taxes. Mm-hmm. There may be some exceptions to that, but there's, you know, that is certainly something that is for lawmakers and the public to be aware of, is tax cuts could potentially put some of that money at risk.
So some of the federal funding that we've gotten has conditions on it that the state doesn't do certain things, doesn't use the windfall that comes in from federal funding to act a certain way.
Right. And also that the state does do certain other actions, including maintaining certain levels of education funding. And that is also under what we've seen come out of finance so far, not at the levels that it would need to be to achieve all that, you know, receive all that federal aid. You know, Republicans on the Finance Committee have said that they intend to take care of that. They have not said how they intend to take care of that, to my knowledge. So that's another thing to watch, you know, in the
coming weeks. They're not just aware of the inconsistencies between what the federal government wants and what the state is proposing, but they're acknowledging that they want to address it. That's a good sign.
Yeah, they have said that. We'll see, you know, what the plan is for that and whether or not that seems to meet what the federal requirements are. You know, I mean, on the Democratic side, you know, Governor Evers has rescinded, I believe it's $300 million of budget cuts, essentially budget cuts that he had put into place for this year as a sort of emergency measure to react to the pandemic and the budget shock that it was expected to provoke. So that is, you know, one thing that the governor has sort of done immediately. Obviously, you know, Democrats have priorities like education and healthcare, and they have talked a lot about putting funds into those areas.
And have we, I mean, we've seen from the Republicans in the past, them not being impacted by the federal government's sort of mandates on Medicare, for example. So they're not necessarily intimidated by the federal government saying, do this or you'll lose money. They've left money on the table before.
I mean, there have been times in our where we have done that as a state. I mean, probably maybe the most prominent, well, two prominent ones would be, one, their decision not to expand Medicaid to people at somewhat higher income levels. That would have drawn down a lot of federal money. And then in the end of 2010, beginning of 2011, we as a state turned down, it was roughly $750 million that could have been put to use building and upgrading a passenger rail line between Milwaukee and Madison.
I daydreaming about that passenger line on a regular basis when I want to go to Milwaukee. Yes, yes. We have a caller joining us. Alex, thanks so much for joining the conversation. You wanted to talk about tax cuts.
Well,
Alex, sounds like we lost. Oh, are you still there?
I'm here. Hello? You can hear me?
Oh, hold on one second. Rochelle, we can hear you. Let's try it one more time. We also can hear something else in the background. Alex.
Okay, anyway. Well, you know, with tax cuts, a lot of times, yes, it's going to help the wealthiest people. But, you know, a lot of people are paying far too much in taxes. I have a little concern about how cities like Madison will spend it. I know they want to, for instance, spend $90
Alex,
million
it's really hard. Rochelle, let's cut that. It's really hard to hear you. Sorry that there were too many noises in the background. Maybe
There's
we can fix it. We're better. We fixed it. Alex,
okay. Start
over. We're ready for you. Technical errors. Welcome to the lovely world of live radio. And Alex, go.
Okay. You still there?
We are here. We're ready.
Okay. Anyway, I know in the city of Madison, for instance, they were talking about getting $90 million from the stimulus, and they wanted to spend $90 million on the buses. And, you know, but yet you've got homeless people on the streets. So I kind of have to wonder about where the money is being spent. And I understand that, you know, Gordon Hintz, Representative Gordon Hintz really wants to, you know, give everybody a helping hand. I mean, a lot of times he's the one getting a helping hand, if you know what I'm saying.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, I think you make really good points there, Alex. And Jason, your thoughts on that? And that really sort of ties into a next question that I have. I'm right with you there, Alex, on the idea that, you know, with all this surplus of money coming in, it feels like, hey, we're doing really well. Maybe sort of the tide is turning. And then I look at what's happening here, specifically in Madison and Dane County, and I look at the local government and using the federal funds to help with individuals pay rent, to help our schools do broadband infrastructure. to help in so many ways. And it, although the help has been fabulous and warmly appreciated, it hasn't been enough. There is more demand for job training than we can fund on the local government. There is more demand for rent resources than we can fund on the local government end. So is there any way that this money can be funneled to even continue to boost what's being spent through the federal government support?
Well, I mean, the state tax revenues are very helpful in that they really can play roles that the federal tax dollars cannot. I mean, those, the federal dollars are really earmarked for certain things, and they have a lot of restrictions on them. They're one time in nature. So, you know, in an ideal world, you don't want to plug those into an ongoing program or an ongoing tax cut, even if that were allowed. Whereas these state tax dollars are, I mean, you know, nothing is guaranteed, but they have a much greater likelihood of being ongoing. And they're really very, they can be used for any purpose.
Gotcha.
So, you know, that's the real advantage. And that is why, you know, you can think of whether it's state infrastructure or whether it's, you know, doing things to address the worker shortage, whether it's doing things to reform local government aid, aid to school districts, property taxes, or just, you know, ensuring that the state budget remains strong, whether that's, you know, things like replenishing our unemployment fund, which was went down by about $1 billion over the course of this pandemic. There's a lot of opportunities that this influx of funds puts forward. We don't advocate for specific policies, but we did put forward some options.
Well, and let's talk about those a little. Is there any vision for things that we know have a track record of bipartisan support? Our Wisconsin state legislature being controlled by the Republicans, our governor being a Democrat. You know, we've seen infrastructure things that have some bipartisan support. Talk about supporting employment opportunities. What do you think has potential to move forward?
Well, I mean, a couple of things that would have, I think, some bipartisan support. One is investing in broadband. In rural areas and in some urban neighborhoods, there's still a lack of access. Both parties have talked about wanting to do that. There's no reason why that can't happen. On the side of, we're seeing many employers talk about having challenges getting workers. On the skilled labor side, you could fund higher education institutions. You could provide financial aid for students, which really hasn't grown in a decade. You could support employer training and apprenticeships programs. On the level of unskilled or just all labor, you could provide support for childcare through tax benefits or subsidies to parents or direct support to providers. You know, I mean, those would be just a couple things that you could potentially do to address some of the challenges that are as well as our economy is starting to do are still holding us back.
Right. And have you heard any conversations about this, or this is just you're hoping they start these conversations based on a history of talking about these issues before?
I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance that something really significant happens with respect to broadband. You know, some of these other issues, I don't know. We'll have to see.
It's hard to see. And Jason, we're near the end of our time, but my final question for you is, if this money doesn't get spent, turns into rainy day fund? And is this going to be the biggest rainy day fund Wisconsin has ever seen? What does that mean? We get the money, whether the legislature has the good sense to spend it or not. What happens when it isn't spent?
So we're expected to close this fiscal year on June 30th with roughly $4.2 billion in our general and rainy day fund balances. That would be the most
billion in a generation.
Mean, even thinking about it as a share of state spending, I mean, it would be a remarkable sum of money. I mean, you know, it could grow after that, depending on what we do in the state budget. You know, so, I mean, the good news is that there are a lot of federal funds available in the moment. So I don't think we necessarily need to be tripping over ourselves in haste to come up with just a mediocre idea for spending the money. I mean, I think we have the time and ability to come up with the best and most thoughtful approach. So that's, I mean, that's the good news. But I mean, obviously there are people that are at this moment hurting, and we now have the opportunity to reach them in a way we didn't before.
Well, it's been wonderful talking with you, Jason Stein, the research director with Wisconsin Policy Forum. It you're the bearer of the good news. And in December it was, all right, let's buckle down. We've got to work hard. I was re-listening to our conversation in December. And, you know, this is a different conversation. And as it keeps twisting and turning, as right, we've welcome to a pandemic world. There are no rules, perhaps. And as it keeps twisting and turning, we will look forward to talking to you again in the future if things change up again.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful. Thank you. Jason Stein again, the research director with Wisconsin Policy Forum. And we are going to now transition to the second half of the show, another sort of update of what's happening in the world. We have Matt Rothschild joining us. He is the executive director of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Carousel. Thanks for having me on again.
It's great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us. And so we've talked about the anti-voter legislation happening across the country and also here in Wisconsin. But something special happened in the last few days here in Wisconsin, specifically that business and faith leaders have spoken up sort of unprecedentedly against these bills. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there's been amazing work done to bring Wisconsin business leaders to the fore and have them stick their necks out, kind of in ways that sometimes business leaders don't want to stick their necks out.
Yeah.
And there's been a simultaneous effort to lift up the voices of faith leaders from a wide variety of denominations in Wisconsin to denounce and decry these anti-voter bills, which will make it harder for everyone in Wisconsin to vote by absentee ballot and will make it much harder for persons with disabilities and poor people and persons of color to vote. You know, they're going to reduce the number of drop boxes we could have in Madison to four and in Milwaukee to four when Milwaukee had 15 and we had 14 drop boxes. I mean, what are people supposed to do with their absentee ballots the day before election? It's going to be like handing in your taxes at the post office at 10:30 at night on April 15th. There'll be a huge traffic jam and people will get discouraged because they can't stand in line for hours and hours just to drop off their absentee ballot. So there's a whole lot of problems with a whole bunch of these bills. And it was just nice to see the business community, you know, kind of rise to this occasion. And it was led by the Milwaukee Bucks, which is an organization that not only has a great basketball team that's in the playoffs here, but also has a great social conscience. I mean, they've been speaking out against police brutality. They've been speaking out for civil rights, and now they're speaking out for voting rights. And it was great to get the Bucks on board. Also, some major companies down in Milwaukee, like the Waco Group, the high-end shoe company down there, and Corey Nettles, the former Commerce Secretary here in Wisconsin, as well as the Latino Chamber of Commerce from southeastern Wisconsin. You know, the Republican Party likes to claim that they're the party of business. We got a whole bunch of businesses, more than 60, that have signed on to this, and we're going to be getting more and more. And by we, I mean the Wisconsin Voting Rights Coalition, because both of these efforts, the efforts to sign up business people in Wisconsin, the effort to sign up faith leaders in Wisconsin, these efforts were organized by the Wisconsin Voting Rights Coalition, which is a great group of pro-democracy groups here in Wisconsin, like the League of Women Voters and Common Cause and the ACLU. We're part of it, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Conservation Voices of Wisconsin has played an instrumental role. All on the Line is, and All Voting is Local, I mean, has played a big role. Main Street Alliance, this new group that organizes progressive businesses in Wisconsin, has played a big role. You know, I didn't do any of the signing up of businesses or faith leaders. You know, I'm just a blabbermouth. That's all I am, Carousel. I just come on and talk.
You're the best radio voice. We got it.
But the folks in the coalition did the hard work and the spade work and the all the tough, you know, relationship building to get people to come together. And so here in Dane County, we had a lot of business leaders sticking their necks out too. I just want to mention a few. Salvatore's Pizza, the great pizza place in Madison, in Monona, also in Sun Prairie, Fitchburg Family Pharmacy signed on, a Landmark Creamery in Belleville signed on, the Madison Writers Studio, Michelle Widgen's group signed on, a group called Table Wine that Molly Moran runs, or Functionaire that Eliana Stein runs. The Madison Reading Project was on board, Cadre Restaurants on board. You know, there are a lot of groups that have signed on to this. And I think more and more are going to come on. Businesses can sign on. The sign-on sheet is at the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin's website. And we're trying to get as many more businesses to come on board as possible. I mean, there needs to be an awareness among the right-wing legislators that are pushing these anti-voter bills that the business community is not right behind them like usual. And that a lot of businesses that I was speaking to in preparation for this, you know, they want Wisconsin to put the best face forward. They want Wisconsin to be able to attract talent, not repel talent. And these anti-voter bills are going to repel talent. People aren't going to want to come to Wisconsin if we keep going in this rightward direction. And so I think that's one of the reasons the business people came on board. And the faith leaders came on board just simply because it's absolutely wrong. And it's against all their teachings. And so it was great to get both groups coming out last week. Faith leaders holding a press conference here in Madison, and the business leaders coming out in an exclusive that ran in the Journal Sentinel on Sunday.
Let's break all that down. I love all of this. This is fabulous. So, Matt, talk to us at the beginning about how did you get these organizations, you and the coalition that you're a part of, to get these businesses to stick their neck out. What made it about this legislation that wanted them to get involved in politics?
Well, the great group Souls to the Polls down in Milwaukee did a lot of the work in approaching the Bucks and had, I think, personal relationships with some of the people at the Bucks and were able to get, the Milwaukee Bucks on board. And then there were other members of our coalition who had other personal relationships with other businesses. That's how it happened. It doesn't happen with a random phone call to the corporate responsibility office of such and such a company. It happens because you have personal relationships with individuals in companies, and then those companies, bring it to the fore. And if they're in leadership or if they're very persuasive, they're able to bring their company around. So we have a big coalition of more than 20 groups in the Wisconsin Voting Rights Coalition. So you can imagine each group has its own set of personal relationships. And that's how the business thing got going.
Do you think voting rights in particular is something that really got their attention and wanted? Is there something that ties that to when they think about businesses, when they think about future workers and the success of their businesses, that they think about people that want to live in Wisconsin?
I think that was a part of it, but maybe a secondary part of it, Carousel. Okay. 'Cause I think the first part of it was, they're just grossed out like the rest of us are, who have a moral conscience here and a political awareness here, that these anti-voter bills are anti-democracy. And they worry about the anti-democracy movement that's sweeping this country and that swept the Republican Party way far down the hill. And I think for many people in the business community and in the faith community, that slide down the hill is just too horrifying to just to let go and not speak up about. I mean, for instance, Corey Nettles, former Commerce Secretary under Jim Doyle's administration here, now with a financial group in Milwaukee, a real big player in Milwaukee in the business community there. He doesn't always speak out on every social and political issue that comes down the pike, but he saw this one as a really important one. And I think just as personally horrified at what's happened in the Wisconsin state legislature with these anti-voting bills. He sees what's happening across the country with anti-voting bills and with the rise of white nationalism. Mm-hmm. And so I think, he just can't stand it anymore. And a lot of the other business people just have had enough. And, you know, this is a time to be counted. This is a profiles and courage moment. And I think people want to be counted.
Mm. And what about the faith community? I mean, there's been such great leaders from the faith community consistently, you know, speaking out for democracy, but particularly on this, especially because the language in the letter, and we'll get to that in a moment, is really strong and it holds nothing back. It says we condemn this legislation. That's a strong word choice. What did you see from the faith community wanting to be involved?
Well, first of all, I want to tip my hat to Bonnie Margulies, Rabbi Bonnie of Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice, who did so much of the work in getting this thing going, lining people up, getting it off the ground, and organizing the press conference as well that was held here in Madison last week. So she deserves a lot of the credit. You know, there are a lot of amazing people at that press conference. Bonnie was there, Pastor Walter Lanier of the Progressive Baptist Church in Milwaukee spoke very powerfully. One of the leaders of the Wisconsin Council of Churches spoke very powerfully as well, as did Reverend Carla Garcia, who hosted it at her church, the S.S. Morris Community AME Church on Milwaukee Street there. Just, you know, there are a lot of impressive faith leaders on board. Reverend Marcus Allen of Mount Zion Baptist here in Madison.
This
African-American church here in Madison. He signed on, president of the Council of Rabbis of Wisconsin, Rabbi Steve Abrams, signed on, and a lot of other faith leaders here in Madison and Dane County.
It's really impressive the level of diversity in the business leaders and the faith leaders that have signed on to this. And I want to talk about the language in the letter. It's short and it's sweet, but it packs a punch. I appreciated that it condemned the legislation and that it said this is a threat to our democracy. You know, when crafting this letter, was there, you know, sometimes the letter sort of, you know, dance a little, dance, say words, but not too far. And this really seemed to have strong language to it.
Yeah, I wasn't involved in the drafting of it, but I do admire it. I mean, I think it's very clear. It's very straightforward. It's very powerful. It isn't a time to mince words. And I think the faith leaders understand that. I think the business leaders understand that. This is a time for everyone to speak loudly and clearly in defense of our democracy, because we're at an anti-democracy moment here in this country that we haven't seen in my adult lifetime. I mean, January 6th, I mean, we almost lost the democracy then and there.
Yeah.
And those folks aren't going away. The Trump fever broke for about 12 hours and then it spiked right back up. So, you know, we've got some problems on our hands here with the rise of white nationalism, and the hand in glove of white nationalism with the biggest part of the Republican Party, it seems, and their own media networks that feed them 24/7 with an IV drip, all this ugliness. And so the question is, you know, are we going to sit idly by and just think it's going to go away? Or are we going to raise our voices, and are we going to organize in every way that we can nonviolently to try to save democracy and expand democracy?
We're talking right now with Matt Rothschild. He is the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. We're talking about the business and faith leaders that have come together in opposition to the anti-voting legislation proposed at the Wisconsin State Legislature that just passed. Some of it passed the Wisconsin State Senate. If you would like to join our conversation, we would love to have you. Give us a call at area code 608-256-2001. If you have a question or a comment, what are your thoughts on this legislation and the work that's being done? We would love to have you. You can join live on the air, or you can pass your message through to Rochelle, our producer, who's sitting in the studio waiting for your call. Area code 608-256-2001, extension 9. So, Matt, talk to us about what you see right now. You've been advocating and fighting for democracy and justice and progressive values for a long time now. Does it feel like there's a sense of both fear and hope that we're so low, the concern, how much lower can we go, and hope that we can finally all come together and rise up against this?
Well, let me talk about both of those things, Carousel, because I do have fear. I do have fear, pretty nightmarish fear, about the risk that we might lose our democracy, whether it's in 2024 or sometime after that, because these forces on the right that are violent and racist and irrational, you know, this rise of irrationalism itself with QAnon and all the other craziness that people believe is itself kind of shocking.
It is shocking.
In a late democracy where we're supposed to have an educated populace that people will believe the kind of nonsense that they're believing. And it is a cult. Other people have said it's a Trump cult. QAnon is a cult. People fall for cults, and they're falling for cults en masse. And fascism was a mass movement. You got to remember, I mean, democracy won't fall with a couple generals conspiring. If it falls at all, it would fall when someone like Trump, maybe a DeSantis, maybe a Tom Cotton, you know, will be able to rally forces in the streets. I mean, what would have happened on January 6th if pro-democracy forces tried to confront those crazy people who are staging that fascist coup or trying to stage that fascist coup? Then Trump could have, you know, called out the military, declared martial law under the Insurrection Act, and the democracy would have gone right then and there in front of our face. And of course, there were people like the MyPillow guy who were telling him to declare martial law. So we just barely escaped that one. What worries me is that the millions of people who still believe that Donald Trump won the election, including the woman who runs the Assembly Campaign Committee, Janelle Branchon, who went to Arizona last Friday to inspect what's going on there. I mean, we have a level of kind of insanity even within the Wisconsin legislature that's hard to believe. So that's the fear. The hope is that so many people, good people in Wisconsin and across the country are recognizing this fear and responding to it. I'm lucky in that I work, you know, day in and day out in this Wisconsin Voting Rights Coalition, in the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition, in the Money Out Voters In Coalition, with a whole bunch of great nonprofits and great activists, many of them much younger than me. They don't have my gray hair. And I just wanted to salute a few people who are instrumental in getting these coalitions together, the Business Coalition and the Faith Coalition. Anjali Basin of the Conservation Voices of Wisconsin is a huge leader in this. Barbara Beckert of Disability Rights Wisconsin played a gigantic role. Sean Pettiplace of Main Street Alliance helped a lot lining up businesses. So, you know, this is a huge group effort. The League of Women Voters just does a tremendous job day in, day out, both at the state level and local level. Common Cause is a great organization. You know, they're great people working all over the place here in Wisconsin, and we're working together. That's the unique thing about the pro-democracy movement in Wisconsin. These nonprofits, you know, we pretty much torn down our silos and shelved our egos, and we're not, you know, wrestling for this piece of philanthropy and this crumb from another donor. We're trying to work together, which is pretty unique as far as
I was going to say. Have we seen that before? I mean, I know there's always been coalitions and collaborations, but it's great to hear about all these groups that you're a part of: the Wisconsin Voting Rights Coalition, you say, the Fair Maps Coalition, the Money In, Money Out. Do you see a desire to work together, to really rely on each other's expertise, to let, you know, people of color lead civil rights advocacy, you know, environmental groups lead environmental justice, et cetera, where we all can stand and support each other in our expertise?
Yeah, and we try to be good allies. And yeah, I do think it is very impressive, this kind of, these aren't paper coalitions. These are actually organic, dynamic, ongoing working coalitions that our group is a part of, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And I think Wisconsin is a model for how a progressive nonprofit, a pro-democracy nonprofit sector should work. So that's what really gives me hope.
I want to talk about these bills just a little bit. And I know, you know, we've talked about them on the show, which is why I sort of skipped over them a little bit, because we've gone in detail about it. But I want to talk, three passed the Wisconsin State Senate in the last, was it a week or so ago? Definitely in the month of June. And two of them dealt with indefinitely confined voters in healthcare and nursing home settings, really sort of taking an attack on disabled voters and elderly voters. Can you tell us a little bit about those bills?
Yeah, there's been just a whole bunch of bills that are making it harder for everyone to vote, and especially hard for persons with disabilities. First of all, making it harder for everyone, some of these bills would prohibit the Wisconsin Elections Commission or the Madison County, the Madison clerk, from sending out absentee ballot applications en masse to everybody in Madison or everybody across the state. Why shouldn't they? We should be able to get an absentee ballot application if we wanted. We're supposed to encourage people to vote in this country and in this state, and this is a prohibition against that.
And those didn't pass the Senate yet, right? Is that true?
Yeah, I believe they're up to bat. Actually, one of those is at the Assembly Rules Committee today, and I'm not sure exactly where it is as far as the Senate goes. But they're all circulating through. I suspect that most of them will pass. Now, as far as persons with disabilities, I mean, one of the bills, SB 205, which is also at the Assembly Rules Committee today. This requires if you are indefinitely confined or in a nursing home, this requires the facility to notify your family members when special deputies, when voting is going to happen at that care facility. I mean, this is the worst kind of paternalism, treating people who are in nursing homes like they don't have a mind of their own. And it's just, it's a ridiculous invasion of privacy. Another one of these bills that affects persons with disabilities who are indefinitely confined, if they want to return an absentee ballot and it's getting close to election day and they don't trust the post office to get it there in time, they need to have a family member return it for them, if they have a family member in Wisconsin. Now, just imagine how nutty that is, Carousel. We're here in Madison. Say I have an immediate family member. The only immediate family member I have in Wisconsin is up in Ashland. Is really my brother in Ashland going to come down to Madison and drop off my absentee ballot at the post
Absolutely
office because it's too late for me to put it in the post? You know, that's not going to happen.
And you know, we do a lot of early voting in Wisconsin, but there's a benefit to waiting to vote towards getting closer to the election. You learn more, more investigative reporting is done. We shouldn't be forcing people to vote earlier and earlier and earlier when they have a right to spend time to make their decision.
And yeah, and sometimes they're hard decisions, and you want to wait until the last debate and want to, you know, talk to friends if you have people you consult about their opinions and take their advice, or you want to look at the editorial in the State Journal or whatever.
Right. We have a couple of callers joining us. Let's see if we can fit them in before the end of the show. John, thanks so much. You've been holding for a couple of minutes. You had a question about election security.
I mean, not really that. It was more, you were kind of getting to the point. I was just wondering, like, why, like, say you consider it an idea of election suppression rather than election, like maybe the Republicans would say it's something having to do with election security. I was just wondering, like, why the bills were considered kind of suppressing voters. And you were kind of starting to talk about it. So, yeah, I didn't really know too much about the bills in general.
Okay.
Well, here's another one. This one absolutely drives me around the bend. It's called Senate Bill 212. This would prohibit clerks from correcting the tiniest, the most petty omission on the absentee ballot that's submitted. When you submit an absentee ballot, you need to have a witness sign it. And that witness has to put his or her address on the envelope. So what's happened sometimes is people sign it, they put their street address, they put Madison, Wisconsin, they forget to put 53703 down. They forget the zip code. Now clerks could, last time some clerks just filled that in because it's incidental and you can find out what the zip code is.
That's allowed across the state.
Anyway, just by Googling it, right? And it doesn't mean that you've got an illegal address. It just means you forgot the zip code. So now if you submit an absentee ballot, your witness didn't put his or her zip code on it, your ballot is thrown in the trash. Your ballot won't count unless you find out and go to the website that there was an omission and try to correct it in time. But if it's 2 days before the election, you're out of luck. And so that's just another way that they're making voting by absentee ballot more difficult. And it's ridiculous and it's terribly petty. And I think it's just anti-democratic.
And there's the drop box that you mentioned that did pass the Wisconsin State Senate that limits the number of drop boxes that communities can have to, what is it, one at the clerk's office and then three more throughout the city if you're a population of 100,000 or more. And that would, you know, Dane County and Madison had more than a dozen, and that would limit us all of a sudden to four. For no purpose.
Right. And I was talking to people on UW campus. They had drop boxes on the UW campus that were very handy for students who don't have a lot of times transportation. And so we're going to have only a maximum of four drop boxes for the population of Madison that is going to be at about 250, or Milwaukee that's twice that. And that's just crazy.
Yep. We have, okay, we're going to try and squeeze in. Thomas, thank you for, you've been waiting for a couple of minutes. You wanted to have, you had a comment about anti-democracy history. Thomas, we're going to give you 60 seconds. Do your best.
Okay, yeah. My comment is, if you go back 100 years with the Ku Klux Klan basically running the White House, we've been through this before. And this is dangerous, but I don't think it'll kill democracy. And I like your response. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Matt, what do you think?
Well, Tom's absolutely right. I mean, the history of the United States is a history of voter suppression. We started with voter suppression when only white males who had property could vote. So no one else could vote. But I am worried about the wave of voter suppression bills across the country. And some of these bills, not in Wisconsin yet, but that would empower states to overturn the results of the election. Mm-hmm. They're taking our voices and our votes away. That's the big play right now.
So, Matt, our final moment here. What are the next steps? People that are listening, what should they be watching for? How can they get involved?
Well, I urge everyone who's listening to contact your legislators or contact the leaders of the Republican Party. And if you know business people or faith leaders, contact them and see if they could sign on to these open letters in opposition to these anti-voter bills that are circulating right now in the state legislature.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for all your work and all the coalitions that you are part of. We appreciate that. And thanks for joining us today. Again, Matt Rothschild, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Thanks, Matt.
My pleasure, Carousel.
It's always great to have you. And thanks again to Matt. Thanks again to Jason. Thanks for all our callers and listeners. Thanks for Shali, our news director, and Rochelle for producing. And we'll see you again next week. See you soon, everyone.
Six foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, no precision.